Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. First, there is an omission that both the Chair and I did not make. We really would appreciate if the committee could visit at least two AFC research campuses. And the reason for that is so you understand the nature of the work that we do, but also so you can see the people that work there, and third and most important, so you can see the kind of equipment and infrastructure that we have as an organization. Because that, I believe that will also give you some very good understanding of some of the challenges that we face. Chair and honorable members, we will try and answer the questions as they came. My colleagues will need to answer the questions as and whenever I request them to do so. The question that came around the APAP, Agriculture Policy Action Plan, I think if you start looking at the strategic plan on page 28, it starts to elaborate on what is the Agriculture Policy Action Plan of the strategic plan, and then it tells that, you know, then we've also indicated how we're interpreting it as ARC. As the ARC, we don't see our work as something separate from what is called Agriculture Policy Action Plan. Everything we do contributes to the Agriculture Policy Action Plan. So it's not a separate thing that's sitting elsewhere. That's why I put up that slide that had all those government policies and priorities, because we contribute to all of them. Same thing with the agro-processing. Government has an agro-processing plan. We internally as the ARC must then have our own strategy that says, what are we going to do to contribute into that particular process on agro-processing? In terms of collaboration, the question that was raised was OBP versus Veterinary Council and so on. OBP is purely a vaccine manufacturer, and then they sell the vaccine. They don't design or develop the vaccine from scratch, from nothing. We do that. We're the researchers. We do the innovation to come up with the vaccine. OBP simply manufactures. So that's the difference. So, but we work with them in a number of areas, in that whatever new diagnostic tools or vaccines we come up with, they have the first right of refusal. You know, and then we can get some other pharmaceutical manufacturer to manufacture the vaccine. The blood vaccines that the OBP sells are actually products of the ARC. So it's simply because of the nature of the science and the technology, in that it doesn't enable OBP to be the one that handles and manufactures. Some of these, you know, like the foot and mouth, it's like a flu vaccine. You have to have the research relative to the latest virus of that month or that year in order to tailor make the right vaccine for that particular year. That is why we're responsible for the foot and mouth vaccine. We also work with a lot of other institutions, universities, including the University of Porto. In fact, we have a collaboration on the Center of Excellence on Food and Nutrition Security, and that includes training of some of the trainers at Porto, but also training of some of the extension officers who go on special courses that are designed by both the ARC and the University of Porto. So we work with quite a lot of the universities in the country in partnership on a number of projects where we feel that we have synergies to add towards each other. The question that was raised is whether ARC is providing advice on land appropriations and land use and bills or something like that, some of the technical issues. We do provide advice mostly to the department around what is feasible and what is not feasible, and how certain things could be defined scientifically so that it can, when it then gets translated into something that becomes legislation, it is much more accurate. So we do interact quite a bit with not only just the Department of Agriculture, but also Department of Rural Development, and even Department of Science and Technology, and sometimes even the Department of Trade and Industry, in providing them technical advice on how certain key things can be interpreted and what the data means. The question around what did we mean by commercialization and so on. I think the context of the question was such that whether that actually adds income to the ARC. Well, yes. A lot of the science that we produce where we have intellectual assets like intellectual property rights, like the plant breeders' rights on some of these cultivars, we license them out there and we collect royalties. And that's part and parcel of our external income. On an annual basis, as the ARC, we generate somewhere in the order of, on average, about 11 million rands from royalties that comes to the ARC. That's coming from people using our technologies, and then they pay royalties, and that's the money we collect on an annual basis. So it arises because you have the technologies that people are using out there, and you're collecting the royalties out of that. What did the 2,207 posts do to the financials of the ARC? Well, I think it's true. Those individuals are not going to all resign or retire in one day. It's going to happen over the next three to 5 years as individuals. And we do plan to replace them. But what we are saying is that even as you replace them, you are not replacing them with senior and experienced individuals, because it's almost impossible to get the same level of experience of a kind of individual. It therefore means you're going to replace them with relatively junior people that might have some impact on your research. For example, if you have somebody that's very highly experienced in developing a vaccine, to get somebody to that level of experience takes many, many years. And if you're now going to replace them with somebody else, you're actually regressing a little bit before, depending on who you get. So it's a question of the impact that it has on the work. I would not want to bog too much down on the impact on the finances on this particular issue. The reason is that even if you might be replacing somebody that's senior in experience, you may probably be paying the same salaries, because the new employee is not going to come at a salary of 1940. That's the reality out there. There was a question about ARC contributing towards the second layer. I wasn't sure what that meant. I guess it was a question around contributing to the colleges of agriculture and so on. We do work with colleges of agriculture. In fact, quite a number of our researchers also provide lectures at the colleges of agriculture, the local college of agriculture in Mpumalanga, for example, which is right next door to our research campus. Our scientists periodically go there and give lectures, but also their students come onto the ARC campus to learn and see how certain things are set up and how certain things happen. And some of our scientists also work with researchers at Tom Pisilika, then Agriculture College. Quite a number of the colleges of agriculture, they interact with them. Is ARC in the space of property development? We are not in the space of property development, but we are charged with a property, because we have property in our name as ARC. Therefore, we have to manage it properly. In other words, you have a land and buildings, you've got to manage that properly. So you need to understand where they are, what their condition looks like, what are you going to do with them, are you using them appropriately, and so on. So that's your own internal management strategy, and you need to then decide how you're going to deal with that. Now, you've got to realize that some of these were research farms. Originally, when they were put together, some of them, it was one piece of a research farm. Now, some of them have been cut up by developments where there's been a highway that goes through this way or that way. You need to now make a decision as ARC. Do you still want to own what is no longer a complete whole that's now been cut up by highways and all of those kinds of things? Are these still useful to you? That's the kind of work that we're going to do in terms of our asset management plan. The question around the use of MIGRO, how does this help small farmers sell their proceeds? I think the example I gave was that the use of mobile applications is one of the key things we're going to do is that our ICT systems must be such that they can integrate a lot of data and information, but also they must be user-friendly, which means that if a farmer, for example, is on their farm and they see some, you know, I don't know, some insect on their plant or on their cabbage, they don't know what it is, all they need to do is take a picture of it while it's sitting on that cabbage and send us that picture. And we can do a diagnostic using that. But you can't do that if your ICT systems don't enable you, you know, for that thing to come into your systems, into your IT systems. That's what you need. But already we are delivering some technical advice to farmers through SMS, telling them, okay, today did you prepare your fields? Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? We're already providing that in terms of text messages via SMS. And we do it, at the moment we're doing it in Afrikaans, in Sotho, and Zulu. And I think in some instances in English, especially the wheat producing farmers. The question was asked about elaborating on the agri incubators. I will ask Dr. Lita Makinga to answer that question. A cultivar is a variety, a plant variety. There are a number of different kinds of plant varieties that you might get of oranges, of cabbages, of wheat, and so on. That's what that is. It's what distinguishes one type of wheat from another type of wheat. That's it. Maybe Dr. Makinga could answer the question of agri-incubators. What is the intention?
Quickly, I think the CEO's presentation gave one of the strategic goals of the ARC as that of translating research and development outputs into usable products and information, but with also a view to ensuring transformation or contributing to transformation of the agricultural sector. So we see capacity building as going beyond just the farmer training, which you have already heard about during the presentation, but also contributing to the creation of viable agricultural enterprises. And that's why this initiative of incubators comes in. So some of the intellectual property that's produced by the ARC is packaged and licensed. That's one example. Royalty free to some of the small enterprises. So the idea is to create viable enterprises. So the ARC supports through capacity building, supplying some of the R&D outputs like technologies such as new cultivars to small enterprises, and also identifying some of those promising businesses like small seed companies that can benefit from some of the ARC's R&D output. And to be able to do this, we work together with, in some cases, GTI. We work in some cases with other members of the private sector, including some commodity organizations, etc. And so the ARC contributes from those two elements. Thank you.
Perhaps if I give you an example, the ARC developed a technique where we could sterilize some of the insect pests that actually infest the fruit out of the fruit farms. And if you do the irradiation of some of the males of those fruit flies, and then you release them amongst the wild out there in the fruit farms, what ends up happening is that when they mate, their population goes down because then they're sterile. That then means your fruit is exposed to less insects, and then you end up with very good quality fruit that is out there, called sterile insect technique. That has since become a small company that delivers this service to the fruit producers out there, and especially in the Western Cape. If you want, you can go and visit that particular company. We've given them a building for them to provide the services. They are situated on our campus in Stellenbosch. So that's what we mean by agri-incubators. Coming up with the technology, making sure it works, and providing somebody an opportunity to be able to make sure that the business can deliver the service. I think the concept of a disease priority matrix, I've sort of tried to explain it a few times, but maybe the challenge is really from our side is a tool that we believe must be a tool that we can use to enable the decision-making process. In other words, you need to understand whether if you are going to eradicate a particular disease, what is it going to cost the fiscus? Is it really worth spending that much money? That's the first part. But what is it going to cost the farmers as well? But if it's a disease that only affects 2 sheep a year out of 1 million sheep, is it worth spending 100 million to come up with a vaccine that's going to deal with only 2 sheep a year? It's really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to design that kind of a matrix so that you can create the relative understanding of which diseases are most important for yourself and which ones are not very important, and what types of remedies or actions are you going to take against the different kinds of diseases that you might have. Foot and mouth, for example, if you go to communal areas, most of those farmers are not exporters. Most of their meat, you know, ends up in the local areas where they are. So foot and mouth is neither here nor there to them. But if you talk to commercial farmers who want to export the meat and all of that, that's a big thing to them. So the impact is very different, and one needs to understand. So that's what this tool that we are designing is about. We've been busy with this particular work. We're hoping to be done with it sometime during the course of towards the end of this coming financial year. And once we're done with it, we'll go through a range of consultative sessions with the livestock sector, all of those that are involved in the livestock, including communal farmers, as well as those that are marketing and exporting, to see how it can then be adapted for use by everybody out there. The question around income generation, whether we could sell journals or something, we do have a journal that we publish at the ARC, the Veterinary Journal. We do get some income, but by the way, that costs money as well. At the moment, we're not getting anywhere in the kind of money that one would think it should be giving us. But we're actually getting more income out of royalties from our intellectual assets than we're getting out of. We're also leasing some of our empty buildings, so we're generating income from leases. We're leasing farms on a year-on-year basis. If we're not using that farm that year, we lease it to the farmer so that at least it also gives us income. We sell some of our produce if we're not using it, and that gives us some income. So we've got a lot of different sources of income. We do provide expert services where we contract out some of our experts to go out there and do certain work. The diagnostic services that we run in our laboratories, that's a service for a fee, and so that gives us some income. So we've got a number of different initiatives. We're always looking for new opportunities. We're also always looking for ways of optimizing those particular initiatives. There was a question around whether the ARC, how does the ARC groom young researchers instead of hiring foreigners? Unfortunately, at this particular stage in the life cycle of South Africa's critical mass of scientists, I don't think we have an option of an either-or. You're either going to get an expert from anywhere in the world, including in South Africa, if that person is available, or you're going to be without somebody. So that's really, those are the only two options you've got. I'll give you a very real-life example that we experienced at the ARC when somebody was involved in apple breeding at the ARC for many, many years, resigned, and decided to go and join some private company and did not want to do any breeding for the ARC. Now, the ARC is the only organization in this country that develops or breeds new apple varieties for the whole industry, not for one company. So when the individual resigned, the whole industry just basically was crying. And that's when we realized that we did not have a succession plan at that time. That was about 7 years ago. We then searched in South Africa for anybody that has that skill. Nobody. We searched around the world. We found 4 people with that kind of skill. 4. One was getting on a plane to be hired by one of the biggest apple producing and breeding companies in the world out in the west coast of the U.S. The other one was just in some other research institution just looking for new things to do. Another one was no longer interested. Another one was also. We then flew the guy here to talk to apple farmers, to talk to apple, apple producers and so on. And then we offered him a job on a contract basis on the basis that he was going to be training young people on apple breeding. He accepted the job, but he got a counter offer from an institution equivalent to the ARC in France. And he turned around and said, no, I'm still going to ARC. And they said to him, we can double. What does ARC have to offer that we can't double? He said, no thank you, and no thank you, I'm still going to ARC. So it was a recruitment not based on salary, it was a recruitment based on simply offering him the environment in which he felt this is where he was going to do something. And he's been training young people in this particular skill. He's been with us for about 3.5 years, 4 years now. We tried to renew his work permit. We got stuck with Home Affairs because now he had to go home, apply from home for his work permit to be renewed. So fortunately now he's got it, he's back. But we're battling with quite a number of those kinds of situations. So, so our purpose of recruiting these individuals, if they are foreigners, they are on contract for specific time periods, but part and parcel of their duties is training other young people inside South Africa, all of them. And it's not only limited to the foreigners. Even our senior scientists, they all have a requirement to train younger scientists. So that is our plan around succession planning. Yes, we do have a bursaries committee, which is the one that is responsible for managing the stipends and issuing the admissions of these students into the project and so on. And many of these projects are also linked to delivering certain products and services to the industry. So there is a bit of, whether it's a useful or relevant project out there. I've answered the question about the relationship with the agriculture colleges. The impact of cultivars on cars, I don't think we understood each other there. Remember, the varieties that we've released is what comes out of our breeding program. We're now releasing them to everyone and anybody out there to use. CAS is a government program for providing financial support and infrastructure to farmers. And some of those farmers use some of our technical know-how. Some of them might be using some of these cultivars. So that table has nothing to do with that. And it's not talking to that. So I hope maybe we were not talking the same language. But it's very difficult for us to know exactly who is a beneficiary of CASP and who's not a beneficiary of CASP, because the data around the beneficiaries of CASP is not sitting with the ARC, it's sitting with both DAF and the provinces, and they are the ones that are administering CASP. However, quite a number of their farmers do use ARC for technical advice and so on. So, and we don't make any distinction, including some of the subsistence farmers who are not getting any other support. We provide expert advice to them as well. Quality of the KYD data that was asked. I think what we gave you was conservative rather than exaggerating the numbers, especially 2014. Those are the numbers as at the end of the third quarter. And again, we audit these numbers before we actually publish them, because I don't want to present something here and then I come back 2 months later and the numbers look very different and you say, but why did you give us this? And now that we're asking questions, what we're giving you is what the numbers that are reliable, that we know actually. working. The question that was also related to that was, what is the impact? I think the statement that we have at the bottom there actually shows you the impact that this is having on the farmers. All right. If they're only succeeding at 35% to have 35% of their animals, you know, having calves, and you move from 35% to anything beyond 55% having calves, that's a big improvement for a farmer. Because then it means there's a real calf and they're going to get some income. But over and above the fact that they're having calves, the prices that these farmers are now fetching for their livestock at the market is at least 20% higher than before they were, you know, on the on this KYD. So it's helping them quite a bit in terms of being able to get the right kind of prices at the market, increasing their income. Okay, I think there's a misperception that the part of the reason the ARC's budget was cut was because ARC is sitting on a lot of money. One, most of it, if you actually look at it, is not reserves. It's income received in advance for projects that have to happen throughout the year. We receive a lot of income from the commodity organizations between end of December and March. Now, when you're doing your financials, by the way, that money is for the new financial year. So by the time you're doing your financials, because you receive them, say, in this current financial year, the money that came between December and January, which is actually only going to be used starting April 1, in your financial books, it is reflected as money for 2014-15. It's not reflected as money for 2015-16. So it looks as if you've got a lot of money, but it actually don't. And we're quite tight with our planning and performance and following up on the delivery on our project, because we sign contracts with people on certain milestones on this particular project, and we actually do give them a report, and sometimes they want the report associated with the invoices as to the exact cost of some of these particular items. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization is one of the organizations that contract the ARC for some services. If, for example, the rent has gone down from 1 to 7 to 1 to 10, and that means from our side, because we would have received the money in dollars, that means we have appreciated the money they gave us. Towards the end of the year, they ask for that gap. We have to pay back to them. So I mean, our accounting, from what what we've seen and what we know, sir, is quite rigorous, and even the AG hasn't really found that wanting in terms of managing the finances of the ARC. The salary increase has been a negotiated settlement with organized labor. That is the basis of the 8%, and it's an across-the-board kind of thing. We did a multi-year agreement. At the time when we did the multi-year agreement, it was something that we felt was reasonable and was within the right benchmark of us being able to deliver. Taking into consideration that for a period of more than 10 years, you know, salaries at ARC were far below salaries of what anybody else in equivalent gets in government, in the public sector. Even today, the salaries in ARC of the majority of our researchers are still below the salaries of people who are working in government departments, even in provincial departments. We're suffering people who resign to double their salary by joining a government department. That's a part of our problem right now. The question around critical success factors. What we are mentioning by the critical success factors is that those are critical for us to do in order for us to deliver onto the sector. Because if we don't do that, then we would have failed ourselves, first of all, as an organization, which then would have a much bigger impact on the organization, on the sector. It's what we've identified as the things that we must make sure we've done in order for us to claim that we've successfully delivered, you know, the things that we want to say we're delivering for the organization. We've answered the question on APAP. There was a question around why would the reduction in the parliamentary grant have an impact on the rural development contract. The budget cuts in the ARC's budget cuts were also budget cuts for rural development. So rural development has revised contracts that it has with us. and they've revised down the amounts because they also have had budget cuts. So any projections we might have had means also we have revised down everything line by line. Chair, I think I already answered the question. I'm not sure if I've answered the question around duplication, but I will ask my colleague, Dr. Gina, you know, around the perception that the department and the ARC are doing the same thing. My understanding is that there's, you know, if we were doing the same thing, then we wouldn't need to exist as the ARC. We are not doing the same thing as a department, but maybe Dr. Gina can explain, you know, what's the difference between the kinds of things we do versus what the Department of Agriculture is doing.
Thank you, good evening to the honourable members. I think if I can start with the IPAP. If you look at the IPAP, there would be a whole series of activities that need to take place to make IPAP successful. And what the ARC then does is will do work on IPAP and produce a cultivar, or produce, if you look at their wheat program, the ARC is actually looking at the disease management of wheat. So that if the wheat program is successful, it will, one of the reasons it will be successful is that we have provided the farmers with the information on disease management. So that's one area that says that. If you look at rural development projects, rural development have contracted the ARC to do work for them. So we are the agents that deliver the work. So it's not a duplication, it is rural development contracting the ARC to do some of that work. If you look at the vaccine development issues, again in IPAP you've got vaccine development. But the ARC is the organization will develop the vaccine for delivery. It's after that that vaccine will go to OBP to be produced and then used by the department to provide farmers with that vaccine. So the department doesn't have the ability to produce a vaccine, and ARC doesn't have the ability to mass produce it as manufacturer, and that is what OBP does. So there's no duplication in that whole this thing. If you're looking at the horticulture, they want to increase the exports of grapes. We are the people that will produce the next cultivar that will have a higher yield that farmers can then plant to be able to grow and get a greater export. The department will then provide them with the other incentives. And I think I'd leave it at that as examples of how we work together, so there's no duplication, that we've got a role to play in that.
Thank you, Dr. Gina. The question around economic competitiveness support package, was this for a specific period? Why did this program come to an end? Well, the start was over an MTF, and we understood that this was going to grow to be a program of the National Treasury that must now be inculcated into projects that we do. And it's actually line itemized projects. There was a whole set of projects around vaccine development. There were projects around agro-processing of some crops, post-harvest handling, and so on and so on. It's been cut for all the organizations, including other government departments, even including the IDC, that were receiving funding under this thing called economic competitiveness support. So it's just been a cut at the end of this current financial year. The ratio of women in the ARC, first, is not by design. Let me be very clear. In fact, we've been spending quite a bit of time and energy trying to recruit young women into the ARC. We actually do have quite a lot. I think they are a majority. Maybe it's because sometimes when I walk into a room, that's all I see. But there's about 40. Ms. Umlau needs to answer the question. This is the executive level, not the senior management level. There are others at the senior management. Our senior management echelon is 44 people. about 18%. 1/8. But I think the point we're getting to is that we.
At top management level, we don't have a female. At senior management level, that's where we have 18% of our management being at being female.
What you're looking at is the top. So. It's important. It was not by design. It's just one of those things. As you're working, some people come and join, some people leave, and so on. We do have an employment equity plan, and we do have targets, and we do hold our people to those kinds of targets.
I agree or we don't agree with that one. That's not a good
reason. Noted, Chair. Thank you. I think we've dealt with the answer on the issue of the funding of vaccine development. The question around the construction of the foot and mouth vaccine facility is scheduled to. We've already appointed the design firm, and we are planning to take that proposed design options to the board for the board to approve. And once the board approves that, we will then be going out on tender for the actual construction. I think what's important is that you know, this is a very special kind of facility. The design and the construction of it must be actually dictated to by the science. So for the last 3 years, we had to go through the science of developing the vaccine and the process of developing the vaccine and working that out in such a way that when we're going to now design it, it's influenced by the science, and that's what we've been maximizing. And hopefully, we should be able to start the construction sometime during the course of this coming financial year. The funds are there. We've received all of the funds that were allocated. They are ring-fenced, so they look as though we've got the, again, it's funds, it's income received in advance. It's not the reserves. It's ring-fenced funds that are still there, sitting there, and the board makes sure that they watch. That we don't actually even touch a cent out of that. There was a question around the commodity trust. What kind of training? All what you were saying is that the commodity trust, like your maize trust, the winter cereal trust, and all of those, they give us a certain amount of funding. And when they give you 15 million rands, they're expecting that for that. The maize trust, when they say we're giving you 15 million rands, they are expecting that you'll bring 15 million rands worth to the same project from the parliamentary grant. What that does is that it restricts what else you can do with the parliamentary grant. It doesn't really add more to your grant. It simply, it's a vote, so to speak. It's people voting on what you must do with the parliamentary grant. That's the pressure that it puts on us. The question is, what kind of training are we doing? Is this the one on extension officers? I didn't quite ask. On what? Yes. Well, there's, yes.
I can't find that page that quickly. Is that a specific page that says 2% is for this and 15% is for development and training, and how much is for this and that
okay. For
agriculture? No, but the previous question also checked. Just looking at the percentages going into the specific areas of research and whatever. My question on the trust was, would the trust section of the funding then also have an impact on the percentages spent on specific areas? I can't find the page. I'm trying to find the page.
Well, I, to be honest, I'm not sure if it will have that kind of an impact. But I think what's important, these percentages are simply are really more indicative. And the reason I say that is, if you look at that percentage on page 64 of the business plan, let's say smallholder agriculture development, the budget allocation for 2015-16 is 11.9%. of the total budget. But what this is not saying visibly to you is that there's a lot of projects that are under crop production, animal production and human health and natural resource management and that actually go towards smallholder agriculture development. So it doesn't necessarily mean that's all the only funds that are going there. So I think one needs to understand that. We've answered the question around agro-processing is the research that we're doing around food safety, food testing, and looking at new things. Chair, there's a request once more in this committee for the ARC to bring the asset register for its land and buildings. We have delivered the asset register 3 times to the portfolio committee here. And Ms. Stain was there the last session of the previous committee when we delivered it as well. So I'm a little bit worried that the committee doesn't seem to know where some of the documents that we presented to them and delivered, where they are. We've delivered that at least 3 times during my term in the ARC. What has happened to it, I don't know. If I may then move on to the next question, the question around staff mobility, the question was around whether these are the people that actually that are high flying, are these actually the people that we're looking for as the ARC? The answer is yes. You want the best of the best. And the best of the best must go to the most poor of the poor if they need to deliver their expertise. What do we mean? You need the best science even for the poorest of the poor. Because I don't know any poor person who wants to be given second-hand information, who wants to be given second-hand tools. We all want the best for ourselves and for our kids and children. It's that straightforward. What are we doing as the ARC? A lot. I'll give you an example. We've got a project that's driven by Dr. Risa, the best thing, where we're using the best science and the best technology in the world. And these scientists have gone to rural villages in northern KwaZulu-Natal and interacted with the villagers. They even took the students as well, our postgraduate students, to interact with the farmers to understand what kind of goats they prefer to own and so on, and why. And then they took samples of these goats, blood and tissue samples, to go and analyze them, just to see if there's any better genetic difference between the indigenous goats and the goats that the farmers say they like. Maybe they like the poor goats and so on, probably because it's more marketable. But then when the scientists come back and tell them, by the way, your indigenous goat has much more valuable genetic traits for the environment in which it is in than the one that you think is marketable, it starts to change people's minds. That's the kind of information that actually needs to go to the farmers and, in the communal areas and so on. And that's the kind of work that we're doing. That is why we've also been engaged in this Nguni breeding program as the ARC together with the IDC, because we believe that if you enhance the usability by farmers of your local indigenous breed, you will then have less worry about diseases that actually would not your indigenous breed are resistant to. How strong is the link between ARC and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform? Very strong. I think the four executives, Dr. Makadela, Dr. Gina, Dr. Rees engaged with the Department of Rural Development. In fact, we formed a particular steering committee around the project that we're delivering on their behalf, which monitors performance and tries to see how things happen. Perhaps Ms. Umlau might want to deal with the question around the psychometric tests, but we are a society that has rights. You can't just subject people to any kind of tests, so we've got to be able to be careful before you just subject people to tests. I'm not sure if the psychometric test is appropriate for what the Honourable Member was suggesting, but Ms. Umlau might want to say something.
Thank you, Honourable Member. What do? We do competency assessments. We don't do psychometric tests. And what we measure in terms of those competencies, because we are looking for people who will be able to perform the job within a knowledge institution such as ours. So we are not really measuring people on basically the mindset, or as you were suggesting, to check whether they are suitable to deliver in terms of, but we measuring them in terms of their ability to deliver the science or the work that we are employing them to do, but not necessarily looking at other aspects, which some of the psychometric tests are looking at. Maybe some of the batteries that we use would be regarded as what might fall under psychometric assessment, but we using them for competency assessment more than anything else.
Thanks for that crisp response. I may not have all the time to motivate this, but I'll say think seriously about the suggestion. That's as far as I want to, because developmental mindset is totally different from a pure scientific capacity to deliver. And that's the gap I'm seeing here. And we need to close it. That's what I'm looking for. And it does tend to get lost somewhere, as much as you excel in your scientific output. Thank you. It's a link between the two. Thank you.
Not for a dialogue, but maybe I should explain this. If for instance, let me give you an example that we're looking for a manager. We do a competency assessment. And in that competency assessment, you'd be looking at things such as leadership skills, ability to manage, ability to deliver in terms of the work that you are giving. You give them different scenarios which they have to assess to give you a picture of whether they'll be able to come in and work and fit into the team that you have. Somebody might say that's a psychometric test, but it's in fact how these batteries are now developed is intrusive. It's not only directing to certain skills that you might look into a person, but looking into a broad spectrum of aspects that you would need in when you're looking for a particular person to fit in your environment.
Yeah, it's the suggestion that Honourable Member say go and look at
We've noted. Thank you. Thank you for that suggestion. There was an outcry around whether ARC is doing an economic assessment of the impact of its work. I think if you look at page 18 of the business plan, starting on page 18 or up to page 20, we've pulled out a few case studies on the economic assessment of the ARC's operating environment. And those case studies relate to the nature of the work we've done and what impact they're having on the economy. And we brought them there more as a background. But if we need to come back and give you a particular case study, we'd be happy to do that. Thank you, Chair. I think we've tried to answer all the questions. Even the question on 40 I've answered. We're doing a lot of work with the universities. Communal farmers, we're working with communal farmers, I'll give you examples of that. Thank you, Chair.
On the salaries, I was saying, what informed was it? I understand it was negotiated.
just want that information.
First of all, it wasn't 8% for every year. It was different percentages for different years. Yes. The 8% is the one for the coming year, starting 1 April. So each different year, we negotiated a different percentage, but we had a multi-year agreement. That's what you were looking for. All right. Thank you.
Thank you to people and your team. Maybe we should clarify the or assist in terms of the document that has happened to have not reached members, and we were not here ourselves, obviously. Asset register, yes. But I think the mistake that sometimes happens is that when the committee asks documents, the entry point will be the secretary of the committee. But if it comes to my office, to my desk, it's my document, not the committee's document. So it might be that's a good understanding. I'm trying to say that. I've seen Honorable Singh was so surprised and shocked that the document had come. But I think what is important is that when documents have been requested by members in a meeting like this one, when the document comes through the secretary office so that every member can be able to get the copy. And CEO, you don't have to get hired to give information. That's your job. Actually, that's what we pay you for. You can even tomorrow must want another document, must bring it. That's your job. but the last thing, CEO, in terms of women issues, it's a very serious thing, and you cannot just leave it the way it is. You said that at the whether it's junior level or middle management, there are a lot of women. But the organization then should have a plan to groom those people to occupy the space as those ones retire or die. And I hope you'll die sooner so that women can that is on lighter note. So I think it's important that we should do that to make sure that we deal with the constitutional imperatives of this country, because the issue that women are not there, it cannot be even after 20 years, after 30 years, you must create them. So, and at some point as we're going to interact, we would want you to bring a plan to us, which shows that we are working on that one. You know, one of the weakness that one has seen probably as one can for 10 business education. You know, as you put your target to, if you just take down Nahajuada for instance, in the Pope and Supreme case, the department come and say, down Nahajuada for, what do you expect Treasury to do? And the other rural development say, we've given ARC 350,000 for down Nahajuada for. So you need to expand on your focusing on what you do, so that it becomes clear to anyone who's reading your document. So, but what as a committee, we want to assure you that we are going to work with you to until we get the funding of the agricultural sector right. There is agreement actually with the Minister of Finance
that they are still determined to reach the 10% as pledged by the SADC president on funding agriculture. But we have to produce a business case that will convince Treasury to fund us. So I think that's the message that one wants to put across. And thank you very much for the presentation. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members.
Members have received the minutes in time, so we're not going to go through them. I'll just go through the pages. Page 1. Page 2. I guess the mover for the adoption, Honorable Singh. Second,
I second, sir. Second.
minutes of the 3rd of March 2015 has been adopted as the true reflection of the previous meeting. Let's look at the 10th. Not went through the health check. It's going to be difficult for me to.
Agreed.
Okay. So we'll look at the minutes of the 10th when we come back. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. That's fine.